Thousand Word Philosophy presents Descartes' Meditations, written by Mark Bobrow. In an era of great debate over the fundamental facts of nature, for example, about the Earth's place in the cosmos, the amount of energy in the universe, the circulation of blood in the human body, René Descartes' central goal was to establish a body of scientific knowledge that held the same degree of certainty as mathematical truths. The Meditations on First Philosophy, 1641, is a classic work that lays the philosophical foundations of this enterprise. It raises timeless and fundamental philosophical questions about knowledge, the self, the mind and its relation to the body, substance, causality, perception, ideas, the existence of God, and more. This two-part essay reviews Descartes' process of reasoning and some of his arguments on these issues. Meditation 1, Skepticism and the Method of Doubt. Descartes begins by reflecting on the unfortunate fact that he has had many false beliefs. He sets out to devise a strategy to not just prevent having false beliefs, but, more dramatically, to ensure that scientific research reveals truth, not error. To avoid any false beliefs, his strategy is to doubt any belief he has that could be false or that he could be mistaken about. His senses have deceived him before, so they could be deceiving him now. So he rejects all sensory-based beliefs. He reasons that if an alleged source of knowledge is sometimes deceptive, then it could always be deceptive, and so it should be rejected to find beliefs that cannot be false. He realizes that if he were asleep and dreaming, many of his beliefs would be false. For example, if he were dreaming about walking somewhere, his belief that he is walking would be false. Since he cannot ever tell if he is dreaming or not, this is further reason to doubt any beliefs from the senses. Dreams appear the same as genuine experiences that cannot be distinguished. He also realizes that he could be mistaken even about dreams that seem clearly true to him, whether awake or dreaming. For example, that bachelors are unmarried. He could be mistaken even about such beliefs, because he could be being deceived by some evil genius or even God. This is possible, and he cannot show that this is not his actual situation. Since Descartes wishes to reject any belief that could be false, that he could be mistaken about, he rejects even these beliefs. The sciences, however, rely on beliefs not only about the physical world, but also about mathematics. And by the end of Meditation 1, Descartes is tempted to rid himself of the desire to acquire knowledge altogether. Meditation 2, The Essence of the Human Mind. In an epistemological epiphany, Descartes notices that one of his beliefs cannot be doubted and is therefore certain. I am, I exist, is necessarily true each time that I pronounce it or that I mentally conceive it. Descartes simply recognizes that he exists as long as he is thinking. This is true even when he's dreaming, and even if he were deceived by an evil demon or even God. Whenever there are thoughts, those thoughts and their thinker exist, even if those thoughts are within a deception. This is the cogito, as it is given in the Meditations. So Descartes knows that he exists, but what kind of thing is he? He can conceive of himself existing without a body, but cannot conceive of himself existing without thought. So he must be a thinking thing, something doubting, understanding, affirming, denying, willing, imagining, and feeling. Descartes takes this to mean that he is essentially a mind and not a body. How does the cogito escape the net of doubt cast in Meditation 1? Descartes says that judgments about his own thoughts are entirely unproblematic. The contents of his mental states are clear to him, meaning that he can clearly tell what his own beliefs are. However, even granted this transparency of mental states, how does he know that there is a single entity that is the subject of all of his thoughts? Descartes asks rhetorically, am I not the same who now doubts nearly everything, who still understands something, who affirms that this one thing is true? His unstated answer is that he is a single entity that endures over time. Meditation 3, the existence of God. Being a thinking thing, Descartes knows that he has ideas. He notices that one of these ideas is the idea of God, that is, something eternal, infinite, all-knowing, all-powerful, all-good, and the creator of all things. But where did he get this idea of God, a perfect being? Did he invent it? Did it come from other people? No. His idea of God could only have come from God. According to Descartes, a cause must be at least as real or perfect as its effect. The idea of God, however, represents much more reality and perfection than the idea of himself or of anything else. There's only then one possible cause, God. So God exists. This is Descartes' causal argument for God's existence. However, God might be a deceiver. God could have made Descartes have many false beliefs. That's possible. How then can Descartes be sure that he can trust any of his beliefs besides the belief of his own existence? In the case of the cogito, Descartes saw very clearly and distinctly that to think, one must exist. But how does he know that clear and distinct perception is always reliable? For example, how does he know that triangles have three sides if there's an evil demon deceiving him? He now realizes that there is no way that an all-good being would make it so that when he clearly and distinctly thinks something to be true, that it wouldn't be true. An all-good being would not deceive him or allow an evil demon such license. Plus, he's just proven that God exists. So now he can trust that whenever he clearly and distinctly thinks something to be true, it is. Meditation 4, The Source of Human Error. Descartes argued in Meditation 3 that since God exists, most of his beliefs are true, even those that aren't clearly and distinctly perceived, since God wouldn't allow him to be routinely deceived. But of course, he sometimes is in error. The problem is to account for his errors of judgment without assuming that his ability to judge is hopelessly defective. Descartes solves this problem by arguing that whenever he makes an error in judgment, it's not God's fault, but his own. He has the ability to believe something even when there isn't sufficient evidence. Judging involves both the intellect, the ability to know, and the will, the ability to choose. However, the will can easily be abused, for while his intellect is limited, it lacks clear and distinct perceptions of many things, his will is not limited. It can affirm and deny even on the basis of insufficient evidence. The best course of action in such cases is to simply abstain from judging. God is hardly to blame for such error, rather, it's the misuse of our wills. Meditation 5, The Essence of Physical Things. Descartes then defends a theory of essences that is intended to provide a foundation for scientific research. He has many ideas of things that may or may not exist outside his mind. However, they are not his invention, but have their own true and unchangeable essences. For example, he imagines a triangle, which may or may not exist, but does not the triangle of his mind's eye have an essence that is true and unchangeable? Importantly, it is not invented by him. Every triangle he imagines will necessarily share certain properties. For example, its three angles will equal two right angles. This provides Descartes with a second proof for God's existence, for his discovery about essences applies not only to the objects of mathematics and geometry, but also to anything, even God. As long as he clearly and distinctly perceives a property of God, that property must actually belong to God. One of those properties is existence. Therefore, God exists. This is Descartes' ontological argument for God's existence. Meditation 6, The Existence of Physical Things and Substance Dualism. All that remains for Descartes is to demonstrate that the external world of physical things exists and that the mind and body are independent substances capable of existing without the other. Descartes argues that it is possible that physical things exist. Since he clearly and distinctly perceives the true and unchangeable essence of physical things, extension, divisibility, etc., he infers that there is some reason to believe that there are things that actually possess this essence. The existence of physical things is also suggested by his imagination, for its contents depend on something distinct from himself, most likely physical things. That is, the best explanation of how imagination is possible includes the existence of physical things. But what is Descartes' proof of the existence of physical things? He speaks of the ideas that seem to come from his senses. For instance, he has a head, hand, and all the things that make up his body, and perceives pain and pleasure in his body. He perceives heat, texture, light, sound. All of these things help him to distinguish the sky, the earth, and all bodies from one another. Now, it makes sense that his sensory ideas were caused by things distinct from his own thought, since his experiences of these ideas were not controlled by him and were very lively and vivid. That is, his ideas were produced by bodies existing outside of him. How can Descartes really know that his sensory ideas were produced by physical things? He says that there are three possible answers: himself, God, or some other higher being, or physical things themselves. Descartes rejects the first, since the ideas in question are produced without his cooperation and often against his will. Also, he has such a strong conviction that his ideas of physical things are produced by physical things themselves that if God were in fact the cause of these ideas, then God would have to be a deceiver. If not the first two, the answer must be the third: physical things themselves. Descartes next argues that mind and body are really distinct things. Premise 1. He has a clear and distinct understanding of his mind as a thinking, non-extended substance. Premise 2. He has a clear and distinct understanding of his body as an extended, non-thinking substance. Premise 3. Clear and distinct perception can be trusted. Premise 4. So the fact that he can clearly and distinctly understand one substance apart from another is enough to make it certain that the two substances are really distinct, since they are capable of being separated, at least by God. Therefore, it is certain that his mind is really distinct from his body, any body, and can exist without it. This provides the foundation for his unique brand of substance dualism, sometimes called Cartesian dualism. Descartes claims that his mind is not in control of his body the way that a sailor is in control of a ship. The mind-body union is deeper. But how can the mind and body causally interact or be unified in a deep way if minds are really distinct from bodies? Descartes replies to this objection in a couple of ways. First, the brain is the interface between mind and body, and perhaps within the brain, it is the pineal gland. Second is an argument by analogy. We know that magnetism actually occurs. Oppositely charged particles attract. But what is it exactly about oppositely charged particles that causes this attraction? We know that magnetism occurs, but we can't really explain how it does. Just as we know that the mind and body interact, but cannot fully explain how. Conclusion. Descartes' time was punctuated not only by debate over the fundamental facts of nature, but also about the correct methodology for answering such questions. While the Meditations on First Philosophy does not offer answers to such scientific questions, it does defend the correct methodology for answering them.